Welcome back to the Footy Coach Podcast. This is episode 130. I'm Jock, your host, and this is where we get on great footy guests to get their insights, their tips, tools, strategies they've used throughout their coaching or playing days. And us as coaches, us as players, can grab a hold of these tools, grab a hold of these strategies, apply them to our own games and help us take it up a notch and get to the next level. And this week's guest, I'm excited to have on John Dietz, who is the current Gold Coast Suns Futures head coach, also the North Queensland Academy manager for the Mighty Suns. He's been in the talent manager space over in WA with the Football Commission and Peel Thunder. And hey, it was great to talk a lot about Queensland footy, about the Suns, all their excitement. Obviously, the new head coach there in Dimmer Hardwick, and talking about his program he's running there with the future Gold Coast players coming through the system. And just the all good things happening in Queensland 40. So great chat. Love going through it. We went through a heap of stuff through the development space, talking about development plans, key principles, better and more consistent football, AFL coaches he admires, players he's come across that really have just exceeded expectations and how they did it. A whole heap of stuff you're going to love. So make sure you listen in, check this one out. Before we get into that though, just quickly a shout out to everyone who is sharing and telling your mates about this podcast, other coaches. That's what it's all about, guys. It's a free resource, and we hope we can share this with as many people as we can across the country. So please send this episode, send other episodes in the podcast across to anyone you think might benefit. Coach or player, and hopefully this will help them get their game to a new level, which is what we're all about. So that's enough out of me. Let's get started with episode 130 with John Dietz. Welcome to the show, John. Excited to have you on and talk some football, talk your role up north there in mighty Queensland. And that's what I'd love to start with. If you just share with listeners sort of what your role is up there, and what that entails.
Yeah, Jock. So my role with the Suns, basically look after our under 16s male program, which is probably the most significant part of the job. So work with about 60 boys down here on the Gold Coast at the minute. Then also looking at our programs through North Queensland. So the Gold Coast got about 1 million people over an area probably an hour and a half apart. North Queensland, we've got about 300 kids in the area, sort of 13 hours apart in the car. Then we go up into the Cape as well. So trying to work with the talent through our Gold Coast North Queensland region, then coach our under 16s boys through the National Carnival, which will be in July.
And you've been in that role for the last couple of years, is that right, with this 16s role?
Yeah, so coaching the 16s boys for the last 2 years, and then so it's been the third season, and then been with the Suns for five. So yeah, 5 years on start of May. So yeah, coming up pretty quick.
Amazing how time flies. Could you talk to, obviously in the general landscape of things in football, we're hearing really great things about Queensland. Obviously the draft just gone now. You've had some great success. You did really well at National Carnival in the under 18s. Can you talk to us a little bit about your experience in Queensland the last 4 or 5 years and football's development in that space?
Yeah, definitely. It's been really interesting. I lived here about 10 years ago, Then went over to Perth. So to see the growth in footy here in 10 years, it's absolutely massive. Like AFL Queensland have done a fantastic job with their development programs. The two academies coming in, and it'd be the same in New South Wales with the Giants and the Swans, with the Lions and the Suns here. Like just the ability to access, I guess, some more high-level coaching, work with the AFL programs. It sort of gives kids a bit of a pathway to high level footy, which probably didn't exist a number of years ago. And COVID probably helped Queensland as well. There's a lot of interstaters moved up through that period of time, and the junior footy clubs do an unreal job up here, just getting kids in, giving them a really good experience. And we're lucky enough we get to take sort of the cream off the top of it. But there's been a lot of work going at grassroots level through AFL Queensland. A lot of really good people at footy clubs up here that just work really hard to give kids good experience. And yeah, we probably work with now in our academy about 800 kids. So the numbers have just gone through the roof, which is going to really improve your talent.
So just explain to listeners with 800 kids, so how does that sort of work in terms of your academy? Is that you got obviously a number of different bases throughout the state, or is that just overall with men's, women's, 16s, 18s type programs?
So that's across male and female programs. So we start at under 13s with the academy. So we've got boys and girls. We've got about 10 hubs across our region. So we've got three in southeast Queensland, so one in Northern Rivers, New South Wales, two on the Gold Coast. Then we go up to North Queensland. We've got seven hubs up there. So that they're obviously a bit more spread out, and there's a few less numbers up there than what we have on the coast. But across male, female, yeah, we start with a wide base, and then we sort of it gets a bit pointed as we get to sort of 16s, 18s programs.
With your under 16s, I'm obviously really interested in this space. As I just mentioned before we started recording, listeners know I'm coaching the Geelong Falcons under 16s, which hopefully will lead into a bunch of kids getting a big country chance and then come up and compete against you guys and all the national carnival there in Gold Coast, I think mid-year, July, June, July. Talk to me about your program with Queensland and the under 16s and how much training you're doing as a group from now to July. So we're in March as we record this. What's that program look like for those kids coming together? Obviously, you mentioned you've got some of the geographic stuff with kids coming from all over, but how's that work for you as a coach and managing that?
Yes. Yeah, so what we do, so we started training pretty much when school came back, term one. Yep. So we've got a squad of 60 boys down here on the coast at the minute who we sort of identified through our under 15s program, schools football, yep, last year at community footy. We're in a bit of a different situation this year. We've got sort of 33 boys who played Div 1 footy and 27 who sort of played Div 2, Div 3 in that group. So we think there's some really good talent across all our junior footy clubs. Yeah. Then in North Queensland, we've had another 48 boys training up there across their sort of regional hubs. Yeah. The North Queensland boys had a carnival on the weekend. So we're really impressed with the talent up there. We'll probably take 10 to 15 boys down to come down in April. Yep. We've got intra squads this week down here on the Gold Coast, and we'll end up with a squad of about 50 for a zone championships in April. We'll play that, then we'll pick a squad of about 30 for the national carnival from that, and they'll train through term two. So, two nights a week. Our regional boys will train sort of a bit more one-on-one footy style with their regional coaches. Yep. And down here on the coast, we'll have sort of a squad of 20 to 25 boys that'll train leading into that.
So I'm just obviously doing research before we jump on this chat. You've had some roles and sort of talent manager roles over in WA and spent a lot of time in this space. Obviously trying to identify talent, obviously something close to my heart too, what I'm trying to do here in Geelong. But what are some of the traits you might be looking for? And obviously you're probably thinking long-term of these players, you're thinking hopefully get drafted ideally, play state-level football. What are some of the couple of traits you look for? Like I know a couple of years ago, we had Gary Buchanan on the show. Obviously, the Hawthorn recruiting legend had that his first draft picks. I think will hardly ever be topped when he had Lewis Hodge, Lewis Buddy, and Buddy. Roughhead. So that's it's a reasonable start. 300 game is straight off the bat, so you can't go wrong from there. But he had a couple of things that's always stuck with me. He just first and foremost has to recruit good people. And second thing he says was good kicks. They were the two things he was looking for. What are your sort of thoughts on that space when you're trying to look at players and who could develop and who could do some good things at a high level in football?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing is obviously being able to play the game. So fundamentals, we've been really lucky with our academy. Reece Shaw has come on as director of coaching with our academy, and he's just been an unbelievable resource for us, a fellow who's played in premierships and coached at the highest level. And we've really had a focus with our academy, just getting right back to basics and fundamentals. So players who can execute by foot and hand, clean with their hands. So the one-touch players always seem to stand out in our opinion. And then their ability to make decisions under pressure. And then I think the physical attributes are really important. So players who've got like genuine speed and power. I think if you watch the AFL now, it's just so heavily based around speed and power and players' ability to move laterally through traffic. So if you see kids who've got a mix of all that, that's great. At 16s level, it's really varied. There's some kids who have matured early. There's some kids who are late developers. And I think there's a lot of crystal balling at 16. You don't always get it right at 16, but when they're 18, you tend to get a bit better understanding of where they all lie. But yeah, definitely the fundamental skills, decision making, and yeah, those athletic traits, that speed, power, really kids who are able to run really hard from contest to contest, yeah, they're the key things also.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. It is interesting. I always, thinking about like if you can get really good at identifying at 15, 16, as you mentioned, it's not easy. It's not easy even at 18, let's be honest. But if you get really good at it and you get these kids into your program, the development they can get amongst like a Gold Coast Academy program or a Geelong Falcons program is so important, isn't it? Rather than kids who do miss out on that opportunity. Even though they can come back in later and do good things, but I just feel like if you can get it right at 15, 16 and get the right kids in there, it's amazing. I think the sky's the limit on what you can do with these players.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a real focus on trying to bring, have a real hot percentage of our under 16 boys progress into our 18s as bottom ages. We're massive on that in Western Australia, just really trying to promote those kids through into those sort of eight. So they do their 16s, really good foundation program. Then as they get into sort of their Colts footy, their under 18s footy, the more exposure they can get as sort of 17-year-olds in those programs, playing with kids in their draft year. That's just an unbelievable development tool for those boys. The learning that takes place with the resources, like it's yeah, those top end kids really get a good opportunity these days for sure.
I talked to our players too about like these kids coming together pretty much for the first time, or they did like under 15 carnival last year, a number of them. But the reality is, as you come through, and this is your draft class, I think that's a thing to get across to kids and realizing that if he gets better, he's going to make me look better, and if we can help each other get to the top. If you've got a midfield who's improving the kick in, he's going to hit a forward more often than not, rather than missing the target. And then, therefore, the forward looks much better because he's clunking them rather than getting kicks off the side of the boot, which aren't quite hitting the target. And the defense is doing their role and makes the mids look better and so forth. It's so important, isn't it, to have a group come along together and understand how connected they are as a team. But as a team, they'll achieve their individual goals of playing at the highest level, whether that's state league or, good high-level football, local football, or let alone, the top-level AFL.
Yeah, it's always a challenging one when they come into these programs too. I think everyone's got a bit of stars in the eyes, and always every kid wants to play AFL footy. I don't think that's there's nothing bad about that at all. Every kid wants to play AFL footy. So it's how do you get those boys to or girls to buy into a team concept? Sometimes there'll be the gun midfielder at their side. They come into this program and there's five absolute jets that play in the midfield. So they're I guess as a coach, you're building ability to, I guess, sell the role to the kids that they're going to play and how that it will help them with their development and their progress and how that helps the team. And look, I always look at it and think if you've got 22 players who play really well, more kids are going to look good for those high level of footy. So we're really big here with the Suns about team first. Jared Cotton, our under 18s coach, he's massive with team first. And he's always looking for those players who can play a role. You're always going to have your standouts, but those kids who play a role that they're so crucial at any level of footy, let alone our level, but any level of footy for any coach, it's really important to find value in all your players and how you can utilize them to help your team.
No doubt. Like it's team first. And let's be honest, players, you're playing this game to play with people. You play this game to connect, you play with to celebrate, to work through the challenging times. If you don't want to play as a team, go play tennis or go play golf or go to athletics. There's plenty of individual sports out there. But I think players, if they really look at themselves, 99.9 probably just want to be with people. So just, I think it's bringing them back to that sometimes, isn't it? Like we play this game because we want to play with others and celebrate with others and share something special. And I think when they get away from that, like it just doesn't help them in any way, I don't think.
Yeah, well, one thing we always talk about with our players here is around when the players at the end of the year retire in the AFL and what they sort of say in their final press conference. And I reckon 99.9 of them always say, I just want to be remembered as a really good teammate. They don't talk about best and fairest or leading goal kicker awards or anything like that. They always talk about, I just want to be remembered as a player who's respected by my teammates. And I think that is just the be all end all with footy. If you're regarded as a good teammate, if you play your role, you do your job, doesn't matter what footy club you play at, you're going to be really highly respected and you'll find real value in what you do. So So it's a message we sell from as soon as they come in the door. It's sort of 14, 15 here at Suns. I know a lot of talent programs around it's trying to give that message as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I might say something a little controversial, but I'm not even that big on like best and fairest and individual votes and that. Like it's a collective thing, and I know from a coaching standpoint, you want to give individual feedback because they have individual roles to execute as part of a team. So you need that one-on-one. But to single people out, I just sometimes even think like yes, it's part of me. I'm actually even just sort of mulling it over about how that sits with me in terms of worrying too much about that and winning those awards because we wouldn't lose as a team. It's a team game, coming back to my comment before. And even those sort of things, like, yeah, that doesn't do wonders for me as a coach, to be honest.
Yeah, best and fairest. It's always interesting. Oh, I think they're so subjective as well. Depends who votes. Depends what you value as a team. Like a junior team in our competition, we've got a number of different clubs, and that they all value different things. So even at Peel back in those days, like I think our five best and fairest when I was there in our Colts, not one of them got drafted. So it's probably more that they've got continuity and they've played every game, as opposed to the kid that might go away and play state footy and miss five or six games. So yeah, best and fairest, they're great. It's nice recognition for the individual, but no one has a reunion for best and fairest winners, I don't think. So
No.
that's
That's yeah, it's spot on. That's spot on. I want to talk a little bit about your overall philosophy with your coaching. Do you have any sort of key principles for better and more consistent football amongst your players?
So we're really big on develop the individual. We've got to treat every player on our list will be different in terms of how they learn, in terms of how they take information in. So we try and provide as much as feedback, and our team meetings are really brief. Like we've really tried to keep things simple. It's probably been the big thing this year, is simplifying everything we do. So really trying to keep things to sort of 2 or 3 points. Our individual reviews, we'll do a verbal one. We'll do emails. We'll do IDPs for our players. So there's sort of verbal feedback. There's written feedback, and then once we start playing games, we'll have all the games coded. So they'll be able to see the vision as well. So massive on developing the individual and give them time. Ultimately, my job's to help my players be the best they can be. So anything that takes, whether it's a preschool or pre school session in the morning, or they want to do some extra tasks before training. We're lucky we've got resources here, but it's always been about how can I help the individual get better, and that in turn will help our team.
I love that. Is there any on a flip side, I always ask my guests, is there any like common coaching mistakes, things you think, traps that people might fall into or something that comes to mind?
I think it's knowing your group. I think we all love the AFL. We all love the tactics. We all love how it's played. But if you've got a group and that might be new to footy, or that they haven't got a lot of experience, got a wide range of kids, it can be really challenging to try and implement a lot of that stuff. So we've really gone to simplify some things, and a bit of a less is more approach to it. So being really consistent with our training drills, measuring sort of how we go through it. So where we start up, what our starting point is, and then sort of 3 weeks later, we do a bit of a test to see how that works. So not trying to overload the kids, and trying to keep it really simple. So one, our coaches are confident as well in what they deliver, and in turn, our players are confident in what they're doing. So we try and throw too much, and I think they struggle with it. But we're really consistent with it, and we just relay all that stuff. At our messaging is really similar at training, pre-game, and during our breaks.
Yeah, perfect. In football, Owen, just want to actually touch back on Queensland footy. You obviously had the newbie coach come in Damien Hardwick. Can you talk about a coach, and I know that's at the AFL level, but just the importance of how they can sort of adjust the culture or set a culture and set a standard amongst a team, in your case, a state even, and how that sort of changes things up. And can you give us maybe an example or two of maybe things that since he's been in the last 6 months, how that has sort of maybe adjusted and changed your club?
I just think the big thing with Dimmer coming in is just his people skills. He's just a people person. He makes you feel valued. He makes you feel like you're part of something. He's got everyone along for the ride, I think. And that's it doesn't matter whether you're the CEO at the footy club or you're in the academy or you're a trainer. It doesn't matter. Everyone's valuable, and I think that's the big thing he's really really big on is bringing people together. And I guess making everyone feel as though they've got worth to the organisation. So it's a big one when you coach it is we've got kids now that aren't going to be with us in probably 2 or 3 weeks, but we still need to make them feel valued and make them feel important and give them a great experience. So he's just his the people skills and the way that he brings people along and just talks to anyone. He was walking down the beach the other week, our boys were training and there he came up and had a chat to the boys and they'll never forget that. So that side of it, the impact he's had already on our footy club has been enormous. Even for myself, like just the access to be able to go in his office, just have a chat to him. It's just unbelievable to have that. So the people side of it. And then I think how he's engaged his coaches and players. Just I guess clarity of role. I think that's been the other side of it. Just how clear he is with stuff, the detail, and the clarity around what's expected. It's something that can be translated at any level of footy, I think. So yeah, the people skills and the clarity of roles.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's really good insight from you, John. In terms of just him engaging his coaches, so just can you talk a little more detail on how he works with, right down through the academy, obviously, but with his assistants. Just give listeners a bit more idea of how he works closely with them, getting the best out of his assistants, which as a head coach and you would know in your role how important they are to getting your team to perform.
Yeah, so I just think it's given the responsibility that they're not cone shifters. They've got a role. Everyone in our coaching group's got a role, and he trusts them to deliver on it. That's been the experience I've seen. I know I've got a really good relationship with Tate Kaysler, who looks after our development and VFL, and just those lines of communication are really strong. And our ability to discuss players and development plans and that sort of it, that's been a massive part of what I've seen is just that transparency and working together, but also have the autonomy to do your job as well.
With development plans, what does that look like for you? What's involved in that for, listeners out there who might be coaching a local club and they want to set some more individual plans? What does it something look like at your level?
Yeah, so what we do, we pretty much speak with boys when they come into our program around sort of two areas that they think are their weapons, and one area they want to improve. We're massive on developing strengths. We think that's really important is develop their strengths, and then probably just one area to focus on. So there might be some of our tools might be really keen to work on their marking. Some of our smalls might be really keen to work on their ground ball. So just trying to keep it to one thing. I think when you try and do too many. You're not going to succeed. So if we've got one thing, we can work on that. Once they hit their target or that they become confident in that area, all right, what's the next thing? And just work on one thing at a time. With that, we try and allocate 3 drills per week for the players to tick off on with their IDPs. So we'll have one that'll sort of be around their strength. So if a kid's a good kick or thinks they're a good kick, we'll work with them on that side of it. So they'll do 50 reps. Then if it's a, then if they've got an area of weakness, so we'll work on probably two drills with that. So real basic ground ball craft might be real basic. Pick the footy up, drive their legs, get through traffic, that sort of it. So we try and have what their weapons in this and their areas of improvement are, and then just try and line up some drills with it individually for them, so they can develop and just build their confidence.
So those just get a little detail on that. So those drills, you just got like a if you've got ground balls, you've got a half a dozen drills or so sitting there that a player could pretty much just grab and do, grab a coach and do if they need it. And vice versa with the strength type drills.
So we allocate the players a coach. So we've got 6 coaches within our program. So our line coach and our development coaches, they're all allocated sort of 8 to 10 players. And then those players who are allocated that coach, they check that off with that coach during the week. We send the drills out, so they've got the drills. They're really basic fundamental drills, but just gives them a real good understanding around what the key focus points are. So ground ball, stay low, wide base, all that sort of stuff. But it just helps them in terms of what they're doing. And then if they've got a couple of mates, and this is the beauty of, if they've got a couple of mates who've got the same sort of drills, it just helps massively because they can sort of help coach each other then as well. They know what they're looking for. It just empowers your players a little bit more.
Yeah, no, I love that. It's just really good to have. Just on, say, an area of improvement. And you mentioned they might have a target or yeah, feel confident. What would be an example of a target? So your marking's not quite up to scratch. What would be a target you might set for a player to know that they've got that confidence now to do that skill well, and let's move on to maybe some other area that they could focus on.
So with one of our tools at the minute, he's sort of grown about a foot in the last 18 months. So he's gone massively, and he's just sort of grown into his body. So at the minute, we're just working with him. If he does 30 marks before training, we're working with him on how many times does he run under the ball. He's still trying to work it out. So we're just trying to get him to line his eyes up, and what does that feel like? What does that look like? So if he's at sort of 25 out of 30 with that, he's going to start marking the ball a bit better. Are his arms bent or are they straight? So our coaches are working with the players on that side of it, just that real sort of finite detail.
Love
And
it.
once they sort of get to about 80%, that's when they sort of think, all right, well, that's starting to look pretty good. Then you can sort of measure it in a game. How's it looking in a game? Or are there still areas that might be with a bit more pressure? They might go back to some old habits. So just trying to, I guess, reflect when we play or do sort of more sort of physical pressure drills. Just reflect on that. All right, how's it looking? How's it translating? We sort of review every month in terms of where players are tracking. So we'll sit down as a coaching group, review every month, just go through our whole list, and then we've got a board sort of with what their sort of action items are. We review on that and just just track how they're going. Are they improving? Have they mastered it, or do they still need some work?
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I think that's an ongoing thing, isn't it, too? Like, no matter how good you get, like, this is similar stuff Nick Daicos would be doing, or Matt Rao would be constantly searching for improvement, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing too is footy's really grey. Like, there's not a lot of black and white in footy. It's really grey. So it's adjusting to different things. Like, we watched the boys play on the weekend in North Queensland, and it was raining for 10 minutes, really heavy. Then it'd be sunny, the sun would come out. So the poor tools struggled a bit with the marking because the ball was so wet. But some of the kids at ground level who are so clean, you're like, wow. So they've obviously worked really hard on that part of their game. So you can see the improvement just through those conditions. So yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Is there a, we mentioned a good one you got there at the Gold Coast, had a huge amount of success, but is there an AFL coach that you really admire from afar or know of, and why is that?
Yeah, I've always been a massive Kevin Sheedy fan. Like, just going back years, and just the way he went about it. Obviously been at a footy club for 27 years, and having sort of evolving his playing group has been massive. In between West Australia, really, it's an issue. I really like Ross Lyon. I just thought his football knowledge and his attention to detail and his standards, I just thought that was unreal. I know he's a bit of a hard taskmaster, and he's really demanding, but to see that from sort of a fairly close quarters. I really admire Ross. I know he cops a bit for not having won a premiership, but to build a list to where he's built it to with St Kilda and Fremantle, and have that style of footy which is really uncompromising and tough. I just think he's been unbelievable with what he's done.
Yeah, it's interesting. Tomorrow we've got a practice match against Sandringham down here. Obviously, St Kilda's second team, so we're going to get a real Ross feel about that in the VFL game, and then obviously watching the AFL boys follow tomorrow night. But I agree. Is there something with Ross that you mentioned? You're sort of relatively close watching him over in WA. Could you give an example? Was he as a fan or as someone just in the country who doesn't get opportunity to be around these programs? Could you give an example of Ross maybe being pretty firm with his players, or hard taskmaster? What does that actually look like? What's an example of that compared to other coaches?
Yeah, I think what Ross did, he was really clear with what he wanted from his players. And if they didn't meet that, he was pretty just demanding on standards. So I think if you look at his, you look at his success and like his stars that played under him, they love him. Like you look at those blokes like Dalceno and Riewoldt, and those blokes absolutely love him. And even at Freo, like seeing the likes of Fife and those guys, like they just really bought into what he was about. And obviously had success, but I just think he was so ruthless with his standards and what he expected from his players and his preparation. I know there's been some blokes who, I think you listen to it all the time when he's got his ex-players on the radio, just if they get something wrong in a meeting, he'd be pretty hard on them. But again, like he's just ruthless and uncompromising and just expects the best. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. Is there a player, and you've worked with a lot of, obviously, players coming through the system there up in Queensland now, is there a player that's really exceeded expectations? And we talked earlier about a bit about talent level and trying to work out who's going to perform, but is there a player that's sort of come out of the woodwork that has really exceeded what you thought they might be able to do, and how do they do that?
Yeah, probably one I've worked with who there's probably two kids at Peel I work with who are just unbelievable stories. Kid Josh Schoenfeld, who was over there, he was a 16-year-old, 2013, and moved over, just played in the under 16s. Was probably the 35th kid in the squad out of 35.
Yep.
Elite level runner, probably not confident with his football stuff at all. Tried out for our Colt squad the next year as a 17-year-old, made a development list, didn't make the main squad, played 5 games and just didn't have a lot of confidence with his footy. Then sort of over the preseason, going into his 18th year, we had a chat and I said to him, and we had a good discussion with our coach, and we're really big on the fact he could play state footy the next year with his physical attributes. He just had to get the footy stuff right. He was a nice kick, just didn't trust himself. But he went away, worked really hard, went out in a practice match against Claremont in his 18th year, first scratch, he had 43 on a wing, and all of a sudden everyone goes, who's this kid? Had a great 18th year, got drafted the Suns, spent 5 years on an AFL list, and he was just a kid who worked so hard to get to where he got. Only played sort of 16 AFL games, but few injuries, and just didn't quite make it as a really good AFL player, but went back last year to East Fremantle, played in a premiership in the Waffle. He's an awesome story. Another kid, Jarvis Pena, we had, who was just absolutely tiny at 14, 15, and just worked and worked and worked. Got rookie to Freo as a 19-year-old, and only spent a year on the list there. He was a bit unfortunate. It was a COVID year, and sort of opportunities were a bit limited to those players who weren't in the squad. But just a kid like him who just worked so hard and drove himself so, I guess, was just always seeking feedback, always doing extras, and just worked so hard to get an opportunity, and to get rookied for him was a real good success story of a kid that at 16, no one probably thought was going to get there. So it's really relevant with our groups. I think at the minute, there's some kids who are the absolute stars, and there'll be some kids we'll look at and go, oh, I don't know, but they just might have that one thing there that gets them over the line.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think just the road development in kids too, isn't it? Like some kids are, you mentioned, fully developed at 15, 16. And then you have kids who just haven't even started yet at 15, 16. And then they go 17th and 18th. And like you say, grow a half a foot. And it just changes their outlook on where they can get to. With training, is there any myths or mistakes in just general training throughout preseason or through the season?
Yeah. With our programs, we've sort of we've really heavily reviewed what we do in terms of our content. We've probably gone away from a lot of fitness stuff as such. It's the real balance, I think, is how you get your conditioning load in with your fundamentals, with your game sense, with any game style stuff that you do in sort of 4 hours a week that we've got. So it's getting that balance right. We've been really heavily focused on splitting our training sessions. We've gone into quarters in terms of how we set our training sessions up.
Yep.
So we sort of, our first quarter is our warm-up and any conditioning stuff. Our second quarter will be our fundamentals. Our third quarter will be sort of a couple of breakdown drills. And then our sort of last quarter is a bit of game sim or ball movement patterns, that sort of side of it. So we've sort of done a bit of that. We've really been conscious on our timing of drills. So our fundamental session, we'll do a 5 group rotation, 3 minutes per drill. I just rotate through. So it's really high octane. Not a lot of talking from the coaches. A lot of it's on the run. So we found that's worked really well in terms of, I guess, getting the session going, getting the players moving. They're not standing on cones, that they're up and about going in smaller groups. And then sort of timings of drills. We've looked at the times of our drills, and the longest drill we do is sort of 8, 9 minutes that we do in our session. So we don't sort of let it go too long. I know I talked to one kid we had the other year, and he said, I'll do 5-star kicking for sort of 15 minutes, and I don't really do much with it. But how much time can they maximize touching the footy in that sort of 7, 8 minutes? Shorten your groups, challenge your group, and yeah, keep your drills similar, but just make sure you challenge your group.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice there. A couple of final questions for you there, John. I really appreciate your time coming on the show. Is there any documentaries or books you might recommend coaches and listeners check out?
Yeah, I'm a big podcast person, so I'm the Flying Coach with Pete Carroll and Steve Kerr. I thought it was unreal when that came out. But I'm a big NFL fan, so Seahawks fan. So Pete Carroll was he
The
was always a
man.
big one for me. But just his philosophy and that, I just think it's really, really refreshing. And the fact he was still coaching NFL footy at 72, how do you do that and have the energy you had? So the Flying Coach is a really good one. And another one, like in terms of the talent, I guess, yeah, finding talent. The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle. I know it's been around for a while, that book, but I think it just talks about hotbeds of talent and how to find it, how to develop it, how to streamline it. So anyone that's sort of looking in that talent ID space or sort of developing athletes, I reckon it's a really good read.
Yeah, no, it's come up a few times, Talent Code. I must admit, I haven't actually read it myself, so I need to get a hold of that and check that one out. But yeah, it definitely has been recommended by a number of guests on this show. And the Flying Coach, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I love Pete Carroll. I think he's an exceptional coach. And yeah, anything his is worth checking out as far as I'm concerned. So yeah, listeners, jump on and check out those ones. Final one for you. If I gave you a banner and you could place it above every coach's door that they're going to see day in, day out, what would you have written on that banner?
Yeah, I think it's be approachable. I think that's the biggest one for me. Be approachable. I think there's a real, it's interesting. You've got some kids who've got a real stigma with a coach about coming to them for feedback, asking questions, building a relationship. But if you're approachable and you're honest as a coach, I think you're gonna get real good buy-in from your players at any level. So yeah, I reckon it's about being approachable and be honest. They're probably the two big things that I'd have if I was going to put something up on my wall.
Love it. Well, appreciate you coming on the show, mate, and sharing your thoughts on footy. All the best for the season. That good time of year when we're getting wound up into games, and we look forward to hopefully catching up down the track.
Awesome. Thanks, H. Jock. Appreciate it.
Before you guys take off, we have the Footy Coach Membership. This is an online resource that you can access anytime, anywhere, online, getting the latest drills and skills that you can implement into your coaching. No more that you have to do the same drill day in, day out. You can access a whole range of ones within our library there. Also accessing favorite drills that AFL's best like Craig McRae, Paul Roos recommend. Check those out along with bonus tips from AFL players and coaches as well. Whole range within there. Like Brenton Sanderson, Alan Richardson, and many more. So check that out at footycoach.com.au/membership. Hopefully you can become one of the members that we have with members all across the nation in all the states. So it's great to see, and hopefully we can have you on board at some point. So check that out there. Outside of that, we have some more ripping guests stacked up, ready to release for you in coming weeks. Keeping an eye and ear out for that. And hey, we look forward to hopefully speaking to you soon.